Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Now, this year marks the 25th anniversary of the explosive memoir, Kitchen Confidential, written by the late American chef Anthony Bourdain. And through his TV shows, Parts Unknown and No Reservations, he became a cultural touchstone for so many people. A food guru full of street wisdom who charmed a legion of fans before his tragic death in June 2018. But he has continued to beguile audiences with his shows and books, picking up new Gen Z fans. And here to discuss his ongoing legacy is the host of the No Encore podcast, Dave Hanratty. Dave, you're very, very welcome.
Thanks.
My goodness, 25 years since that book came out. It was actually an article, a piece for The New Yorker that he wrote back in 1999, Don't Eat Before Reading This, that formed the basis of that big breakthrough book, Kitchen Confidential. What's really interesting, he was sort of eking out a living as a chef before. He wasn't expecting to break through in the way that he did, was he?
You could argue that he wasn't supposed to break through.
Yeah.
I mean, in many ways, he was an accidental celebrity. I mean, I think even he himself hated the word celebrity. Like, please don't put me in that bracket. But as you say, he climbed the ladder. He started as a dishwasher, rose like kind of through the ladder, like all the way up to becoming this incredible chef. And it is interesting that that article, and with a great headline, by the way.
Yeah, great headline.
And that kind of tells you...
Brilliant work by the sub-editors there.
Exactly, yeah. Like, they made their money that weekend. But it is that thing of the book which would follow Kitchen Confidential really exposed all these secrets of the kitchen, and not in a salacious way. I think it was written in this beautiful gonzo style. It felt like a novel. It felt like fiction. And unless you had a friend living with you or someone you knew that worked in kitchens, until this moment, for an awful lot of people, we never knew any of this. We never knew what really went on.
Yeah, he really sort of peeled back the layers of it. Like, I mean, it was the good, the bad, the bullying, the boorish. Like, and when we see what came after later in the culture, like in all of those like kitchen shows, and people are, you know, screaming and shouting and cursing and all of that. But he did sort of open the lid, to use a culinary phrase, on that whole culinary world.
He absolutely did, yeah. And it boiled over, if I may follow your wordplay there. But this is the thing. I mean, unlike, say, a Gordon Ramsay or even a Jamie Oliver, who are two very different ends of the spectrum there. You got the squeaky clean guy and you got the shouty guy. Anthony Bourdain was somewhere in the middle. And I think he was an awful lot cooler as well. Mm. He just had this mystique about him, like a guy that you'd want to hang out with and very much go to a restaurant with or go to the pub with. But it's interesting because he kind of effectively told you that this was a very strange world. It was almost a militaristic place to work in. And you had to have a certain discipline. You had to accept that you will be working these bizarre hours and you will get in shouting matches while there's, you know, a plate on fire in the corner. You just have to get used to it. I wouldn't last a day in that world. There's not a chance. But not only did Anthony Bourdain last in that world, it provided, I guess, a second chapter in his life. I was very struck by the fact that he said that by the time he was 43, he figured he was done in terms of, this is where I'll get to in life. My adventures are over. But the book became a colossal success. And he's on talk shows. He's everywhere.
He's everywhere. But it wasn't just that. That colossal success with the book and with that sort of breakthrough piece also collided with a change that was happening in the world of television. And he really, I suppose, created this new format. Again, that kind of maybe gonzo style, but that notion, I think we knew the first kind of the proposition that there would be food TV, and people just laughed, you know, that'll never take off. And look what happened after that. But he did have this huge success with, you know, Parts Unknown and No Reservations. He brought a new style to even the way we do television.
Yeah, I think his team deserve a lot of credit for that as well, because essentially, like, his second book was going to be a food travelogue. And then if someone approached him and said, why don't we make this a TV show? Why don't we go around the world and go to different places and learn about the cultures and the people who make the food and try and make it much more interesting than just here's a recipe, here's a shot of you eating it. And the thing about Anthony Bourdain at that time in his life, in his mid-40s, was despite the fact that he famously fell in love with food when he was a 9-year-old boy in France eating an oyster, he actually wasn't well-travelled. He hadn't seen the world at this point. But of course, you know, in the years to come, the wanderlust that you would have watching any of his shows. But Parts Unknown, No Reservations, they became these incredible, not just travelogues, but I would say mini documentaries. Somebody referred to him at one point as a journalist, and again, he bristled at that, he balked at that, but I would call him a journalist because he managed to kind of come up with these video essays, again, with his team, of showing you the people on the ground. These are immigrant stories. This is about going to places and having respect for these cultures and also sampling them. And that blew up as well in a way that also became somewhat difficult.
To what extent, look, I mean, he died tragically in 2018, but he had his personal struggles in life. before and perhaps even maybe during his success. To what extent did that form his philosophy, if he did have a philosophy? You say it was sort of like a gonzo approach that he took, but what do you think his philosophy was?
I think he had a lust for life, big time. Mm-hmm. There's a quote of his where he says, first thing I do in the morning before I even brush my teeth is have a cigarette, which is gross if you ask me, but that's who he was. He was a hard drinker. Yes, he did have a drug addiction and he didn't apologise for it, but he was someone who wanted to sample the most from life while also respecting it. You know, I wouldn't call him a cautionary tale, but he was a human being. He was imperfect. He was flawed. And I think it was because of that people were drawn to him. He was an everyman. He was a voice of the voiceless in many respects. He stood up against bullies. He didn't want people, even the idea of the celebrity chef, he didn't like the idea of this commercialization and capitalism that came with food. He tried to keep
and
it real.
And the snobbery that comes with food.
That's the thing, yeah. Like he didn't, like for him, getting a coffee at a garage at 3 a.m. was just as good as getting a Michelin star steak in front of you. It was important for him to kind of show you that distinction.
Was he comfortable with the fame
No, not at all, no. I think it definitely... I think it brought about new problems for him because it just showed you the contradictory nature of these things, that you can't be everything to everyone. And look, he was good with his fans for the most part. He would talk to them. He would be, he'd walk down the street the more he got famous and people would shout at him, oh, this guy's got the best show on TV. And he seemed to be good natured with it. But he wasn't, again, it goes back to what I said at the beginning. He wasn't supposed to be famous. He wasn't supposed to be this out, like he's an introverted extrovert, if that's the right way of putting it.
And he was credited with, you know, what also sort of entered into the lexicon at the time was the Bourdain effect. What was that? And did he like having created that?
That was, if you and I had a restaurant together and our restaurant featured on his show, it would, I assume, do mega business. Like it would probably like pay off the bills for years to come. But it also would occasionally invite some problems in different places in the world, in more underclass, kind of working class and poverty stricken areas where the attention it brought might cause conflict and might cause chaos in his wake. That was never the intention. It got to a point in later years where he would almost go out of his way to hide where they were shooting, like tell a guest to turn over a menu or a napkin, hope that there isn't an establishing shot of the restaurant. Because while it did put all these places on the map and then people in turn would flock across the world to go see them and go eat in them, that had its downsides as well. And again, for him, it wasn't about money. He wasn't taking money from it. But how do you do both? Like, how do you expose these things?
And he wasn't without his critics either.
No, of course not. I mean, he was brash. You know, he said how he felt. He had no real filter. And even in terms of politics, we see all these clips of him surface now about how pro-Palestinian he was and how he would constantly talk about world conflicts. He talked about, in the industry of food itself, he felt it was quite racist. He said, like, well, I'm out here. Yes, I'm one person. I'm a white guy. He's like, why don't we have black chefs? Why don't we have people of color like at higher positions in the organization? And people didn't like hearing that.
Yeah, he said, I'm proud of the fact that I've had as dining companions over the years, everybody from Hezbollah supporters, communist functionaries, anti-Putin activists, cowboy stoners, Christian militia leaders, feminist Palestinians and Israeli settlers to Ted Nugent. He said, if you show me the hospitality when I travel, I'll sit down with you and break bread. But he did, I suppose, you know, food, it's part of our culture. It can be political, but he really leaned into that, it seemed.
Yeah, it's funny because like, this is why I would kind of think of him as a journalist, because I think he did have the right to have all those different people at a table. The idea of having all those different people at a table to some people is completely alien, and in some cases I can totally understand it. Why would you want to talk to a person over there and break bread with them if they have these abhorrent views to you? But I think for him it was about learning about different people's mechanisms and mannerisms, and again, he never put himself up there on this pedestal and said, I am an authority and I will tell you how to feel about things. He just made this what happened to be an incredibly well-made series of shows that did showcase him as a person and the places he went to, and people naturally enough had both good and bad opinions about it.
Did he, and I'm thinking of various people that came after him, did he glamorise a certain kind of masculinity, something that many people argue has had a long tail?
It's a great question. I'm not entirely sure that he did, because I think about books like Fight Club, which I think is an amazing work, and so is the film, but unfortunately it spawned a culture of, in my opinion, morons who missed the point. And I think you could look at Anthony Bourdain and his ways and think, oh, this guy is a reckless rock star. I'll only take that part of his personality with me. But he was so erudite as well. He was so well-read. He knew so much. He learned so much. And that was the big thing for him in going to these places, was finding out new things and learning to be more tolerant of other places. I'm not saying it always worked, but naturally, yes. I did see a thing recently on TikTok. Somebody kind of said that Anthony Bourdain has ruined an entire generation of men, which I think is a ridiculously sweeping, provocative statement designed to be that way. And I don't agree with it.
I know there's a film in the works. What do you think his... and Gen Z are embracing him. I don't know whether the flawed hero is something that we're drawn to. But what do you think his legacy, finally, Dave Hanratty, will be? What do you think it will be?
I think it's that he'll never die. I know that sounds ridiculous because unfortunately he did leave this world in tragic circumstances, and I remember where I was when it happened, and it did hit me like a punch in the stomach. It hit a lot of people that way. We kind of felt like he was a friend. I think his legacy will be a positive one. I think it transcends food. It's not just about that. That's where it starts, and everyone listen to me, if you haven't read Kitchen Confidential, please do. But I think he was a force for good. I do think he was a voice of the voiceless. I think he was flawed. I think he was a rock star. I think he was quite brilliant. He flew too close to the sun, but the point is that he flew.
He did indeed. Dave Hanratty of the No Encore podcast, thank you very, very much for joining us today. And we're going to take a quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.